Anybody need baptized? We can go out to the creek this afternoon. It's nice weather for that. That's when you want to join the sprinklers, that's for sure. We don't believe in dunking anymore. Acts 22 is a testimony of a man that would make the cut for unshackled. Okay, if in case you don't know what unshackled is, it's a Pacific Guard mission up in Chicago, and they will find somebody that maybe usually, it's almost always somebody with a real rough background, and they got saved and life turned around. And if you want to see them, like, do the presentation, they'll have, like, the people that do the voices, and then if in your audience, they make sure everybody coughs before they get started, because it's a live recording. It's a pretty good experience. And so then they give somebody a story that usually is some amazing salvation story, something like that. So this is Unshackled. You can hear it on the radio. I guarantee you my life will never be on Unshackled. Guarantee it, because they don't look for my type of testimonies. And in a way, I think that's kind of given a discouragement to people who were raised in a good home. And I call them the unsung testimonies for the Lord. And so in Acts 22, this man most definitely would be somebody who would be on Unshackled. He'd probably do a two-week story on him. And so in Acts 22, verse 1, boy, look at them cool sunglasses. Nice sunglasses, Carter. You really need the sunglasses in the inside there. So, Acts 22, men and brethren and fathers, hear ye my defense, which I make now unto you. So, Paul has given us testimony, but it's in a courtroom setting, and often people have testimonies. I know a church of that they have every Sunday morning, every time they have service, they have a microphone where they go around. Anybody want to testify? And it's almost always the same six people. You know, almost always the same ones. And then, do you ever get those teary testimonies? I'm not against teary testimonies, but when it's every single time, you know, I didn't thank the Lord for my water heater, you know, something like that, you know. I mean, if it's a teary testimony, fine, great, but, you know, not every single time, you know. Some of you are laughing because you know what I'm talking about. But here's a testimony. You know, my life flashed in front of me, but I fell asleep because it was so boring. And so, as far as testimonies go, in Acts 22, his is a testimony in court. So verse 2, and when they had heard that he spake in the Hebrew tongue to them, he kept the more silence, and he saith, I am a man. I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus of the city of Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel. So he's a very strict Jew, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward God as ye all are this day, meaning religiously zealous. And I persecuted this way unto the death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women. As also the high priest doth bear me witness in all the estate of the elders, from whom also I received letters unto the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring them which were there bound unto Jerusalem for to be punished. And it came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me, and I fell on the ground. It's pretty dramatic, isn't it? And I heard a voice saying unto me, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? I didn't hear any voice when I was beside my bed in a farmhouse when I trusted the Lord. And he answered, Who art thou, Lord? And he said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecutest. And they that were with me saw indeed the light and were afraid, but they heard not the voice of him that spake to me. And I said, What shall I do, Lord? And he said unto me, Arise, go to Damascus, and there it shall be told thee of all the things which are appointed for thee to do. And when I could not see for the glory of the light, being led by the hand of them that were with me, I came into Damascus, and one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, having a good report of all the Jews which dwelt there, came unto me and stood and said unto me, Brother Saul, receive thy sight. In the same hour I looked up upon him, and he said, The God of our fathers has chosen me, that thou shouldest know his will, and see the just one, and shouldest hear the voice of his mouth. For thou shalt be his witness unto all men of what thou hast seen and heard. And now, why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized, and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. And it came to pass that when I was come again to Jerusalem, even while I prayed in the temple, I was in a trance. And he said, and he saw me, saying unto me, Make haste, get thee quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive thy testimony concerning me. So he's given his testimony, but the ones listening will not receive it. I don't know how many times I heard Brother Delmer say, I love to hear testimonies. Anybody got a testimony? And I love to hear specials. Anybody got a special? And Delmas Conley, I would say, probably has the most powerful testimony. It'd never be on Unshackled, because when he got saved, his life didn't go like this. His life went like this. Steadily all the way till he died. That's a powerful testimony. Okay, and so in verse 19, and I said, Lord, they know that I imprisoned and beat in every synagogue them that believed on thee. And when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death, and kept the raiment of them that slew him. And he said unto me, Depart, for I will send thee far hence unto the Gentiles. And that was the last word he said. And they go berserk in verse 22. Gentile was a magical word. It's about like saying, anybody want to pork burger at a bar mitzvah? And so it'd be the last thing you say. My dad's testimony is very similar to that, where when he got saved, and he endured a lot of offenses through the years. Amazing testimony. Sadly, those are unsung testimonies. Saul or Paul, no doubt, would have made the cut for the Unshackled testimony. And I appreciate testimonies of grace within prisons and Pacific Garden missions. I'm not belittling that at all. I appreciate that. But what about the testimonies of grace within Christian families, children that grow up in a Christian home and stayed and became convinced and persuaded? Sure, you should question it. Okay, how you raised, there's nothing wrong with questioning some of the things you were taught. But for children growing up in a home like that and their testimonies of grace, it often goes unsung. An elderly lady of a very small church, faithful lady in that church for many, many years, I guess most everybody in the church called her grandma or something, she gave her testimony one night and people were shocked. She stood up and said, I have a life that God saved me from alcohol and drugs and prostitution and gambling and perversion. And people, we didn't know she did that. And afterwards, somebody mustered up the courage to her and said something like, we didn't know you were involved in that. She said, I wasn't. God saved me from it. That's a good testimony. There's a fine line in being private about our struggles in life and telling others or communicating them your pain and suffering, your emotions, your struggles. There's a fine line between being real private about things and then sharing some things you have, some concerns, some fears, and conquering them. We say very little about our situation, like with Heidi. We say very little about that to people. God has used it. We've helped others through their struggles where we could actually say we understand what you're going through. And there's a very fine line. But the story is told about a little boy. And this boy and his mom, and they were close and everything. But his mom had terrible scars in her hands. Her hands were burned terribly. Our scars came up her arms. And the little boy, as he grew, and he noticed that, but he loved his mama. And then it got to the point where he was like in his teenage years, and he was starting to get embarrassed about his mother's scars. and was a little bothered by it. He didn't know why she had these terrible scars, and he was kind of being a little embarrassed about being around his mother, where he knew his friends would say, "What's wrong with your mom?" Well, she sat him down one time. She said, "Son, let me tell you a story. You were an infant. You were in the little baby crib, and our house caught on fire. And the only way to save you is I had to run in there, and I protected you with my body, and that's why we have these scars." And he said, "What beautiful hands you have, Mama." Because you learn a different story. See, there's times to be private about things, but there's times you do want to tell things to people. Okay, and there's times where maybe we have had an humiliating experience where God, you know, instead of giving, you know, instead of humbling yourself, God chose to humble you by jamming the pie in your face. And a lot of times people don't want to say it, they're embarrassed by it. But, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, what about a humbling that guy got? Nebuchadnezzar, I couldn't figure out how in the world could he keep his kingdom for 7 years when he went nuts. Well, we had a perfect example the last 4 years. And so I'm always trying to figure that out. But after 7 years, the guy's in a nut house, in and out of a nut house, all this stuff. And after 7 years, his mind came back to him. And then he obviously was an embarrassment situation, but he had it written in the Bible. It was written in the Bible. He gave his testimony, a whole chapter, and he closed it out. He said, "Those that walk in pride, he is able to abase." Now, that testimony should have and was known by Belshazzar. Now, God gave Nebuchadnezzar a 12-month grace period when he was warned. 12-month grace period, and then pride hit him, and boom, 7 years nut house. Okay, and I don't know if that's when he got on a sitcom called The Addams Family. He played Cousin It on there, you know, the one with all the hair and everything. I don't know if that was him. Okay, but I guess that was that one. I don't know. And so, but his grandson, who should have learned from that experience, the night the handwriting on the wall, his grandson didn't get 12 hours because of the testimony of his grandfather. And so the Lord keeps track of those things. But a testimony of self-destruction, I think, self-destruction, say somebody's into drugs, rock and roll, and all that stuff. A testimony of self-destruction is one thing, is different than a testimony that involved criminal behavior because of all the victims involved. Criminal or selfish behavior. I think there's two different types of testimonies. But I would think that a church would want to focus their thoughts on the unsung testimonies should be our focus. Okay, now none of us are perfect. All of us have regrets. Some of us have skeletons in a closet. All of us got skeletons, some type of a skeleton in a closet. None of us, I think, would want our thoughts in our head to be put on a screen and shown to everybody. Okay, but my testimony, obviously would never make Unshackled cut, but my testimony growing up in a hardworking, moral family, parents, hardworking, I think the only time I filled out a job resume, which I really didn't want the job, but I was just kind of bored with something, so I filled it out and they asked, "How long, what was your former employee?" And I put Twin Rocks Farm because that's what Dad called. "When were you hired?" I put birth. And so that's all I've known. That's all I've known. But, you know, maybe this might bring me in a running for the unsung, for the unshackled. When I was six and seven, or around 6 years old, I got Sears catalog magazine, and my birthday's coming up, and I'm flipping through it, looking at the toy section, and of course, 6 years old, you know, and I found it. Oh man, this truck! Oh, it was a beautiful cattle truck, and I had all these toys, you know, with all the, and I'd play farming, and then, well, I was playing farming full time at fifth grade, but. Until then, I was playing farming. Once I realized that the boogeyman didn't live in that room, then I would go in there and play tractors because I didn't know that the boogeyman lived in there because we just kept the door shut all the time. I didn't know it was because trying to keep the heat out of there. And I grew up in a house very similar to the one Ernie and Beck live in. Same layout and everything. But so I got this truck, man, I got this thing, and I'm hitting my mom. This is a good one. And so, hey, I got it. I got it for a gift. Man, I was happy. Man, it had a flat top, but flat bed in the back, but it had gates on there just like you see at a 4-H at a camp at a fairgrounds, and I could put my horses in there, my cows in there, my pigs in there. Man, I was enjoying. And my cousin got one just like it. Man, it was good. We could play the same thing at the same time. But you know, I discovered one of the hoofs of one of the horse, the front. Now, I was big enough, I knew I didn't chew on it, but it was off. And when I'd set that horse, and that's frustrating when you want your horse to stand up and he wouldn't stand up. And I don't know if I was playing with my friend. I don't remember exactly my crime that I committed, but I somehow got rid of the one with the bad hoof and got one with a good hoof. And I do believe it was my cousin's, and he also had this little dog. Oh, it's a nice little black dog sitting down, and you push the tail and the mouth would open. Now, he didn't go bark. We didn't have that kind of advanced toys. I had to say, bark, bark, you know, like that, you know, in order to get. But, man, I had two items. That was my life of crime. And now, fortunately, I didn't put on my cowboy hat and have my six shooter, and I didn't go to my cousin and threaten him, say, if you don't give this to, so I didn't have a victim. He probably didn't even know they were gone. So then I got saved a couple years later, and I discovered that God has a good memory. Man, does he have a good memory. And about a couple years after my salvation, the idea of them, you know, obviously, you know, I quit playing with those toys when I was 19. But even at that, and so it dawned on me, I probably should return those. Oh, you justify, oh, he probably doesn't know they're gone. You know, 12, 13 years old, 14 years old, 15. And it was like the Spirit would bring this up and then back off and then bring it up and back off. And I'm 18 now, and once in a while that would come to mind. Oh, man, this is so far gone. He's not going to want to play with those toys anymore. I mean, I just put them away 6 months ago. And so I get married. And in marriage, in Bible school, and it's like one of the boy, does God have a good memory. How did he see me do that? And he just kept hitting me in the conscience. And finally, I said, I got to take care of this. So I went to the farm, dug through the toys, and found the horse, and found that dog. Now, I know in the Bible that the punishment for a thief is that you gotta, if you have the thing in possession, you gotta double it or fourfold or fivefold, something like that, depending on the crime. And so I didn't have another dog. It was the only one. And I don't even know if there was any horses. And I don't think my cousin cared if I got more horses. And so I figured up the money worth. And I put the horse and the dog in an envelope with some cash and a letter of apology. And I don't even think he knew it happened. But I knew it happened. And then I waited about 4 or 5 days, figured that he'd received the letter by then, and I called him up on the phone, and I verbally apologized to him. Apologizing the letter is one way, but verbally is another way. And we got chatting, and he had gotten born again between the time I knew him and now. And my conscience got cleared. And, you know, I kind of learned with life, you know, when you react about some things, and like in basketball, kind of one reason why I'm laid back in basketball is because I had to apologize so many times for being a jerk on the court. I just got tired of apologizing. And so, why? Let's skip this program. Okay? And so that's my boring life. And you know, obviously we all could say the offenses of an untamed tongue has affected all of us. But when you read through the Bible, here's the story of a fella, a wee little man named Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a tax collector. And some tax collectors would charge more to the people in the tax structure and kind of skim off the top. But when Jesus and Zacchaeus had their time in life, their as far as their paths crossed, Zacchaeus brought it up. If I have taken more than it was allotted to me, I restore fourfold. And what did the Lord say? Today, salvation has come to your house. That's quite a statement. Now, this is so important with God. If you would go to Matthew chapter 5, where sometimes in ministry situations, a gift, maybe if somebody has a little wealth, a gift can be an illusion of godliness. It may not be godliness. I know of situations where some of the givers in certain churches are narcissists, appear godly. Matthew 5, verse 23 says, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. I would say reconciliation with your brother is very important with God. Very, very important. He said, I don't want your money until you get reconciled with your brother. Now, sometimes when you've offended a brother, sometimes you can try reconciliation and some folks won't accept it. For example, when David got forgiven, even though King David should have been executed under the Old Testament covenant, and when the Lord came back and said, thou shalt not die, well, he had four very close acquaintances that died because he said, four sheep for a sheep. And he had one son and I think a nephew and some others in there. Okay, but there was a grandfather of Bathsheba who never forgave him. Where we can get forgiveness of God, but when you're dealing with man, you're dealing with something totally different. And the conspirators of with Absalom was Bathsheba's grandfather. I would hope that maybe David tried to apologize to him, try to reconcile, but maybe that was a case where he couldn't get it done. I don't know. In Acts chapter 5, this is another example where Ananias and Sapphira, where they sold a piece of property, they wanted to give the gift to the church there. But the idea was that they didn't have to. It wasn't required for them to give it. But then they up and said, oh, well, we sold it proper. We gave everything. They weren't required to, but they said, we gave everything. And then an apostolic church, you don't want to go to an apostolic church. There's one right out here, 2 and 41. Man, you want to stay away from that because people die in them services if they're apostolic. I doubt one died out there, so it's not apostolic. But even at that, all of a sudden, Ananias is wound up. And here comes his wife and say, hey, Pete says, hey, did you sell such property? Such? Yeah. You gave it all. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I heard from your husband. He's kind of straightening out right now. That's what he's being straight. Yeah, he's straight. Rigor mortis set in. And then she dies. And the idea there is they were pretending to be spiritual. Sometimes people have money where they can pretend to be spiritual. And the Lord sees that. Unsung testimonies is what should be our focus. Now, the unshackled testimonies, I would encourage them to be balanced. We're thankful for the salvation of a soul, especially from a hard life. But what about the victims of their abuse? Criminal behavior. I would say reconciliation should be tried, attempted. I'll tell you a story of one that's going to be on here rather shortly, unshackled story. This fella lived a life of drugs and booze and everything, and his habit started breaking in places, and he started robbing people. You ever get robbed, you just feel violated. I don't know if he pulled a gun on any of them. Bank robbers are kind of heroes in prisons, and so after habitually living this life, when you have a habitual offender, usually they get about 25 or 30 years. And so he's done his time. People said he paid his debt to society. I would tend to think he created more debt for society. Myself, I don't know, maybe I'm being a little critical here. But a thief is not supposed to be placed in jail A thief is to pay back to the person he stole from. Fourfold, fivefold, man, if that was taking place, we'd all put cameras up and then we'd put a big sign, I'm going to be gone for the next 2 months. You know, increase everything we have about fourfold. But you see, in the way our culture, the victim actually is forced to pay taxes, and then you got to force to pay room and board for this guy. Paid his debt to society? No, he caused more debt to society. Now, I don't know about the man's life. Maybe there is a willingness in his spirit, I would hope and pray that there is, that he, that if God would bring across his path his victims of the past, that he would do his best to reconcile. Apologize, pay up, do something. I would hope that would be. I can't imagine how many people Apostle Paul, after he got saved, and he's traveling all through the same area that he traveled to kill Christians, how many young people he came across and said, you killed my mom dead. You took away my childhood. You did that, and you want me to accept you the way you are, pal? And I'll bet you, if anything, Paul being a Christian, that the way I understand it, he would probably bend over backwards, beg. He probably cried so many times in front of those people's faces. I'm so sorry what I did. I am so sorry. I can't correct what I've done. I'll do the best I can to do what I can to help you out. And if they rejected his testimony, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that he secretly started sending them money to try to help them without his name on there, because the pain that he knew he caused. You see, a lot of times these stories where we don't know the behind the scenes, what does the Lord do? If you would go to Matthew 11. I want to honor the unsung testimonies of faithfulness and grace. In Matthew 11, verse 1, it says, it came to pass when Jesus had made an end of commanding his 12 disciples, he departed thence to teach and to preach in their cities. Now, when John had heard in prison, now John was suffering because of the ministry. So he was... probably, I don't think his faith was wavering. I think he was bored to death. I mean, a guy like him living an adventuresome life like he was living, and now he's sitting in a pokey. He was just bored to death. And so, now when John had heard in prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples, said unto them, art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? Jesus answered and said unto him, go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor of the gospel preach to them. And watch this statement. And blessed is he, whosoever shall not be offended in me. What is it that most people do? It's very easy to do when we get offended by somebody, someone, our life. Who do we blame? Who do people blame? Blessed is he, whosoever shall not be offended in me. Not offended by God, who allowed that offense to take place in my life. Luke chapter 7, he repeated that same idea. Why? Because Luke 17, he says this. He said, it is impossible, but that offenses will come, but woe unto him that... through whom they come. It is better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast in the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones. I know what the tendency is. When somebody offends us, we cherish it like a trophy. You see, that's what we do. What about something different? We often, two wrongs don't make a right. That party is going to answer for what they did. You're not held accountable for what that party did. We are held accountable for how we react. Jesus Christ honors those who do not get offended in him. John the Baptist was suffering abuse and offenses due to the ministry. A lot of times people, preachers, people get upset. I can't believe this is happening. What did you think? The ministry is a great pleasure if it wasn't for people. And what people do to others is just amazing to me. But it's no different than an athlete in sports where you have the opposition. That's what the sport's about. But probably the most difficult offenses in life occur from the offense of a family environment. It's got to be the most difficult to overcome. There's supposed to be natural love, but there's abuse. And with time without natural affection is a time of these days, the days of latter days, when a person can stay faithful to God during times of unnatural love. Jesus Christ says, blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. Heidi's email address these last 15 years hasn't changed. God is still on the throne. Through all those years, she just sent me a text, you know, just thinking about me. I think about her a lot. But we need to stay faithful to the Lord. Abuse and offenses in a church environment is probably the second most difficult to overcome, where a lot of times people say, if that's how Christians act, then to hell with God. And that's a natural reaction. I don't blame them for that. I understand it. It's a time to trust. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Now, I believe that when a person experiences abuse in churches or in the workplace, I think you ought to call it out. Call for what it is. Call it to the person for what it is, abuse. Call it up. Let them know. Why? Because if you don't have an objection, if you don't raise an objection, you don't have an objection. This is what Abimelech did with Abraham when Abraham wronged Abimelech. And Abimelech's trying to figure out, what made you say something like that? That's my sister. And Abraham didn't give a good, valid apology. He said, well, she is my sister. Well, the next time around, Abimelech said, we're going to make a deal here. We're going to make an agreement. He set some boundaries. And you set boundaries with these people. People get away with talking like this. Set a boundary. So you don't talk to people that, you're not going to talk to me that way. What are you going to do about it? Well, I'll just leave. We don't have to be dramatic, respond back to them, nothing like that. You know, they throw out their opinion, you just look at them and smile. Well, you're entitled to your opinion, I'm entitled not to believe it. Drives them more nuts than anything. But how many people outside the church walls because of offenses within a church? I think we ought to start a new ministry called Unshackled. Unshackled from the abuses of church. I got unshackled from a bully Baptist and left a situation. There's times you got to leave these situations. And there's sometimes maybe we just chill out. We got to get away from everybody. And maybe there's times where we just said fooey on everything. And maybe a year or two, we go through some of this stuff. And then it's like the Lord just gently starts working on us. It's, I didn't do it. You know, it's going to help you strong. Okay, I can see that. Okay. And maybe we didn't pass our trial with a flying, you know, straight A's. Maybe we got a D minus. That's better than an F. But you see, Jesus said, blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. I don't know about you, that's encouragement. Pain is inevitable. Misery is optional. Overcoming is optimal. And then use that to take our sufferings to help people who are going through it. And like the Good Samaritan, come alongside the victim and have compassion on the abused and help them through it. Walk with them. That passage that Jesus said, just phenomenal. Whosoever shall not be offended in me Blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. What a blessing. Jesus Christ honors the unsung testimonies. Children remaining faithful, figure out what you believe for yourself. Figure it out. Okay, but remaining faithful to the ways of the Lord Jesus Christ is going to bless that. Amen. Okay, let's pray. Lord, I do pray you'd help us to see that life is not fair. We know that. We know you are fair. Sometimes we'll doubt that idea. Sometimes we'll question that idea. And those questions will help strengthen us so we get the right answers. Lord, there's many folks, I know the stories of many of these people in this room, the abuses that people have endured, the offenses. And Lord, I honor them for being faithful to the Lord. And I pray that you, I thank you for the heritage my parents gave me. And I just pray that I could somehow pay them back in some fashion by staying faithful to thee, honoring thee. Lord, I just pray you'd encourage ones who have unsung testimonies, who are enduring some tragic things. I pray that you'd shower them with your blessings as you've already spoken, that it might be a time where they could be overcomers and be conquerors, more than conquerors, as you said, as Paul said, more than conquerors. In Jesus' holy name I pray. Amen.